Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Thursday, and I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. This is Behind the Table. All right. It is Thursday. It is a shorter week for us. We have a show tomorrow, but we're on tape on Monday, so it's going a little bit quicker, which I don't hate.
No complaints.
No complaints. I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. Hello, Alyssa.
Hello, Brian.
All right. So today's show was fun. I felt good energy.
It was a fun show.
It's been a little, I wouldn't say we're in a rut, but there's been some crankiness. Joy was here yesterday. If you listen to the podcast, you might have heard some of the crankiness. And so we decided to throw a curveball and start with the chicken. How did you feel about the chicken?
I'm obsessed with that chicken. I hear it constantly in my head. I actually picture Joy saying it, though I don't even picture the chicken anymore. It's
right.
Just Maria. Well, I think it's been smart. Like, it's going to be a long general election. Mm-hmm. We're going to be in like Trump news cycle hell for a while.
Forever.
We're short out from this like hush money trial, which is going to command all the headlines. So I think it's good when we can talk about something different.
Yeah.
I think you know, starting light with the chicken, but then even this conversation around, are liberals bracing for a Trump victory? And what can they do in advance to kind of preserve the things they care about? So I thought it ended up being a really interesting convo.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on something. We didn't get to dive too deep into it, but just your perception that the biggest problem the Democrats have is going to be from their own left.
Yeah. So mark my words, because I get hit up constantly, you know, well, where are the moderate Republicans coming to Biden? So I'm kind of convinced that a lot of the call Nikki Haley sort of protest Trump votes, a good number of those are going to go for Biden. Exit polls showed that. I think they'll be reluctant, but they are so worried about Trump that they will do it. I think Biden needs to be way more concerned about the progressive left, who's just not with him on some core issues. And I think that's what Mehdi Hasan was getting at, who's a very, very progressive, you know, commentator and thinker, is they've got to brace for the reality that Trump could win, and running thinking there's just no chance it could happen is not a smart way to run. And I didn't get to mention this on the show, but even like the Pod Save America bros, so, you know, senior Obama officials have been very critical of Biden.
But fairly progressive, that podcast.
It is more progressive than on Israel and other issues. So I think they need to not sleep on the fact that the problems with Biden may be within the Democratic base.
It's so interesting, though, because we've talked also in the past about the fact that often Democrats react too strongly to the far left.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a balancing act. I mean, when a lot of you know, Biden traditionally was considered more moderate, I mm-hmm. think, and then during his presidency, some people have objected to him catering to the far left on it. So it's an interesting calculus.
Well, and it's a particularly delicate dance for him, because he does stand to gain with centrists who just can't be with Trump, and even some disillusioned Republicans. But if he caters too far to the left, especially on an issue like Israel, I think that you risk losing one of those sides.
All right. So as a Republican that would never be in this position, if you were advising Joe Biden's team, which way do you go?
So, okay, there was a big article in Politico about how the Biden campaign hadn't made any outreach to the most prominent, call them never Trump voices, the Chris Christies, the Liz Cheneys, Haley, even Pence, who he has a relationship with. Now, I give the Biden team credit. They did a really effective ad targeted to Nikki Haley voters, playing Trump's own words, saying, "We don't want you. We don't want Nikki Haley voters," criticizing her and saying, "You have a place with us." A smart first step. But the problem with not reaching out to those folks is you're leaving some help on the table. Now, I don't think it would help him to have Liz Cheney or Christie endorse him, but campaigns do work with people to deconflict, to say, you know, Liz, your voice would be helpful here. Chris Christie, your voice would be helpful here. And it's not an endorsement. It's simply having people who are powerful anti-Trump voices.
Is it possible it's happening quietly? Because to your point, if they came out for Joe Biden, they'd lose any standing they have with conservatives.
I don't believe it is happening
currently. Okay.
It may change, though. It's also, listen, timing and cadence matters in politics. And
sure.
They may think it's a little too early to do that outreach. But it would be malpractice if leading up to the convention, they haven't kind of started to coordinate those efforts better or try to.
It is fascinating to me that people that I mean, we see it now. Anyone who speaks out against Trump is no longer a real Republican or a real conservative. I know you've been living this for a very long time now, but even people like Liz Cheney, who we all know voted with Donald Trump,
90%+ of the time.
And Mitt Romney, who was the candidate, even W. Bush, I feel like they're just discounted by MAGA Republicans the second they speak out.
It was very interesting. So this morning, Trump did an interview with Hugh Hewitt, and he was really backing away from sort of his ardent support for Israel. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's got some thinking that he could, you know, pick up some votes in the Arab community, some of these protest votes. I think that's a ridiculous long shot that won't happen. But he's walking away from the Republican orthodoxy on Israel. He's planning to come out with some sort of moderate take on abortion, which may be closer to where I am, but it's not where the vast majority of the Republican Party is. He's not supporting NATO. He's blocking a border security bill. Like, he's caving to China on TikTok. Every major conservative fight, he is walking away from the conservative position. And then if someone like me or a Romney or a Liz Cheney criticizes it, we're rhinos.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think the party's going the wrong direction. We're kind of where we've always been.
Right. It's fascinating to see the fractures on both sides in that sense. But it'll be interesting to your point. When it comes down to it, people that are protesting on the left, will they be able to turn that off and vote to keep Trump from winning? I don't know if they will.
I think Biden's got to drum up the fear factor around a second term. And he's made this interesting calculation, or the Biden campaign, I should say, where they're actually encouraging people to watch full Trump rallies.
Right.
And this goes against kind of thinking before, which is like, don't platform it, don't share it, don't encourage
it. Cut away.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't give him the free earned media. And I actually think it's smart. I think that the average voter who's living their life, paying their bill, working, trying to save to put their kids through college, they don't hear about every outrageous thing he says. I was in Florida over the holidays, which, you know, Trump stronghold, and was with more of probably a Romney Republican crowd, but everyone had just resigned themselves. Trump is going to win. They don't necessarily like him. They don't like his personality, but they feel like he's stronger. But when I'd push back, because I don't engage in politics in personal life, usually, unless someone brings it up to me, which they constantly do. and I would raise things, you know, what about him saying immigrants poison the blood of America? Had never heard it. You know, what about saying if Russia invaded, NATO didn't pay their dues, he'd let Russia invade? Had never heard it. And these are highly educated, successful people. So I think there's got to be You need a really sophisticated campaign to just be constantly putting that out
there. Well, and it's the larger conversation the media is struggling with, is how do you cover Donald Trump? It's something that comes up all the time. I know as a matter of practice, we try not to repeat tropes that he says or things that are offensive or inappropriate, but still try to call him out for it. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, the photo of Biden hogtied, we weren't showing it. Most networks weren't showing it. It's
a very difficult. And I actually do think the smart place to be is where we are, where we'll characterize what he says, but we're not going to amplify and show it because some of it is genuinely
but
dangerous.
But the point you just made, sometimes amplifying it is the only way to make sure that people are aware of what we're dealing with. Yeah. It's something we'll continue to deal with as this goes on, for sure. Well, listen, you mentioned you were—
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
Because I alluded to this. So, by the way, keep an eye on this space. I think that Trump is going to kind of create some distance on support for Israel. I think in his mind, there's a calculation that he could pick up some of these Biden protest votes. I'm skeptical that that's true. But it actually is not because he gives a you-know-what about the Palestinian people.
Right.
He hates Benjamin Netanyahu. They had a great relationship when he was in the White House, and Netanyahu, as would any head of state, congratulated Joe Biden when he won. And Trump's never been able to forget that.
Wow.
He sees it as a personal swipe. So this is not somebody caring about the humanitarian cause in Gaza. This is simply somebody wanting to stick it to Bibi.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, you know, he was banking on how he was the most pro-Israel president ever for most of his term and beyond. So the idea that he would walk it back now is interesting.
Yeah. To say the least.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' group text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit. Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, listen, you mentioned you were in Florida, and we've been talking about this both behind the scenes and a little bit on the air. Courts have been ruling that Florida voters would get to consider abortion rights on a ballot measure in November. And there's been talk that this could help Biden in November in that state. Is there any, you know, Biden's famously saying now that, you know, Florida's on the table. Do you believe that?
I don't. I think it's the right messaging from Biden, and they should lean into in their messaging in Florida. It was Trump that was responsible for losing access to abortion. But here's the problem. So we've now seen in Kansas, Ohio, and Kentucky, when there have been constitutional amendments or ballot initiatives to protect abortion rights on ballots, but there's also been Republican candidates who are anti-abortion on the candidate. People have turned out to vote to preserve abortion rights, but then to vote for the very same Republicans who are taking them away. And there was this fascinating, a CNN interviewed this Florida voter who said, I'm not happy that Roe was overturned, but I'm glad that I'll get the chance to vote for Trump, but also to protect abortion rights. Voters are much more complex than we think.
Right.
And I actually think in some ways this gives people
cover,
a little bit of cover.
Yeah.
But listen, it's going to come, a lot of this race is going to come down to the Biden camp's ability to message to swing voters and communicate like he is responsible for this. He's being disingenuous now. It's a pivot if he's moderating.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how that shakes out too.
But it is, by the way, it is kind of crazy to think, because listen, I think when we think of some southern states, Alabama, whatever, a 6-week abortion ban, it kind of makes sense from what we think of when we think of the state. Florida is an incredibly diverse state. There's major urban areas, Miami-Dade,
right.
And that they're going to be operating very soon under a 6-week abortion ban until the election. That's pretty crazy. I think that there's going to be a bit of an outrage that you're going to see. So that's where you could see a softening of support for Trump over time.
Right. I mean, it seems like a firmly red state in every other respect right now, but that's interesting. And it wasn't that long ago.
It was a swing state not that long ago, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So President Clinton, Obama, and Biden gathered together last week in New York for a giant record-breaking fundraiser for the Biden-Harris campaign. You've been on the show talking about how the fact that there are no former presidents on the Republican side that are, or even people that have been on a major ticket besides Sarah Palin, that are supporting President Trump. Do you think this makes any impact?
So the money does. Biggest single night fundraiser in history. Mm-hmm. Biden has a 2-to-1 cash advantage. I think there's that imagery of, look, the whole team of Democrats is on board with this guy, but the Republicans who were once the gold standard are not with Trump. The problem is simply that money can only get you so far, especially against Trump. He's defied expectations. He did it in 2016 when Hillary Clinton outraised him almost 2-1. Because he can command earned media, he can say something and it's going to be played all over the country and he doesn't have to pay a dime to do it. He knows how to actually run a campaign more cheaply, and he's going to have to because he's completely broke. So they can't rest on their laurels that they have the cash advantage. I think it was objectively a success for Biden that they had this event. But I would be saying, Barack Obama, you are better used being in Michigan, talking to these swing voters and demos that you're losing. I wasn't intending to be critical of Hillary Clinton yesterday. We did this conversation where she said, get over it. She just said the quiet part out loud. I would be using Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail. I think they need women surrogates out there wherever they can. I think in many ways she's probably more effective mm-hmm. than Bill Clinton is, just generationally and for the issues that are front and center. But that's where he needs the help. The money has never stopped coming to Biden.
She's always terrific when she's here. And I just saw that Bill Clinton has a book coming out in November, which I imagine will get him out on the
That's, yep. And maybe on our show.
I would hope so.
No, Hillary Clinton is, listen, we disagree on most domestic politics. She's brilliant on foreign policy, and she knows how to talk to women, and that's where they should use her.
Absolutely. All right. We have a listener text for you. All right. This is from Steven in New Jersey. He says, I'm a huge fan of the podcast and a huge fan of the show. Thank you, Stephen. Alyssa, before joining The View, you worked in government and around politicians. Are politicians more centrist than they let the public believe? Do you think politicians play up their partisanship for the cameras?
That's a great question. So by and large, I think that politicians traditionally were more centrist than they would let on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the politicians I've seen come into public life, Congress and elsewhere, in the last 8 to 10 years and kind of the Trump era have actually become more extreme. I think that they're leaning into, whether it's in candidate recruitment, who's, you know, getting the support in primaries. It actually tends to be people who are in a more extreme place than probably would have traditionally won. Because I think about some things, I mean, not because I worked in Congress for a long time, and I think of things that you see a Republican member of Congress say now. John Boehner or Paul Ryan would have stopped some of these statements before they ever went out. Like, we did the subject about Speaker Johnson playing into this fear-mongering about Easter and trans day of visibility.
Right.
If one rank-and-file member put out a statement like that was just factually inept, John Boehner would have called them into his office and been like, we're not doing this. We look unserious. It's, like, not the focus of this Congress. And there was a fear factor, and they would have tamped down. But by and large, most members also were okay working across the aisle. They didn't demonize it. But there's been a real course shift in the last, I'd say even 6 to 8 years.
Right.
And there are certainly there's a rewarding and an incentive structure to being more extreme. You appear on TV more, you have more name recognition. There's a reason, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene has very, very little power in Congress. She's on what we call a D committee, and she's somebody who, is never going to be in leadership, but she's a media fixture. And because of that, she knows how to leverage that power within her own leadership.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you're right. It does seem that there's just been a tremendous shift in both the type of people that are being elected and...
I mean, okay, just this is actually to go down memory lane. When I first started working for Mark Meadows, who was a Tea Party member, mm-hmm. founder of the Freedom Caucus, now very involved in Donald Trump's trials...
Yes.
He was considered one of the most conservative right-wing members of Congress. He had his legislative director look to try to get sponsorships on as many bipartisan pieces of legislation because he wanted to be able to say, I am actually one of the most bipartisan members of Congress.
Right.
Because even though ideologically he was one place, he saw that as something to be proud of, that you looked for the areas you could support someone. The Mark Meadowses, the Freedom Caucus of today would never do that. And that's a 8-year shift.
Yeah, it's a big change. It's mm-hmm. a really big change. All right. Now, you're here. We're talking politics, but people want to hear the Bravo. So let's get right into the Bravo check-in. You've been watching Vanderpump Rules and you have some thoughts.
I always love when we do this because your eyes glaze over. So you have no idea what I'm talking
really
about.
I'm trying really hard to feign interest. But
for the folks at home,
the folks at home care. I realize that. I'm not dismissive of it. I'm looking at one of our producers in the control room. She's nodding. Yes, people care.
I am so okay. It's a good season of Vanderpump. They're delivering coming off of the iconic, Scandoval season. But I'm getting extremely frustrated that it feels like. I don't know if it's production. I don't know if it's Lisa Vanderpump or the cast, but they're just trying so hard to cover for Tom Sandoval and kind of give him a redemption arc. And they're all starting to, like, very quickly turn on Ariana. Now, at the time that this was shot, this was less than a year from the cheating, the scandal, her life being torn apart, her having to, you know, search for a new place to live. And a lot of the women I'm frustrated with, some of the women, because they're basically requiring her to be in group settings or, like, demanding she be in group settings where he is. None of them would do that if they were in the same boat with their exes.
Right.
And then Tom, I actually, somebody pointed out, I don't remember which account, on Peacock, they're airing the longer form of Vanderpump, and they're actually editing out some of the worst things Tom Sandoval's saying about Ariana. He calls her lazy. He said repeatedly, I mean, swearing, terrible, like abusive, narcissistic, horrible behavior.
So is this being done to protect Tom or to protect Ariana?
I think to protect Tom. I think so. I think that they've made a calculation he has to stay.
Right.
I think it's a mistake. I think you could carry the show without him. My hot take is I would have dropped him and tried to get Raquel Leviss to come back, the girl that he cheated with.
Yes.
And let the women figure out how you move forward, how I'm more interested in her redemption arc as somebody who has addressed her mental health struggles, not someone who has never taken responsibility.
All right. I think it's interesting. And they all have an open invitation to come here.
Let's get Andy Cohen on. I've got some thoughts.
Well, we should get Andy Cohen on. And definitely we're open to having everyone involved on the show again, because I enjoyed when Ariana was
here. I did too. And Lala was great too. She should come back.
Now, could Tom survive?
Tom should come on.
Yes.
It would not go well for him, but he should come on. No, I would love to see. I think people genuinely want to see, is he capable of taking responsibility and giving a legitimate apology? And I don't think he has to date, but we would give him the opportunity.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for joining me, Alyssa. Tomorrow, we'll be back with Anna Navarro. In the meantime, if you have a question or want advice from me or a co-host, or just want to talk a little Vanderpump with Alyssa, check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit.